The Kalamazoo Institute of Arts is currently hosting the exhibit Black Refractions, which continues through December 8th. And tomorrow, the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts will host an art hop event featuring visiting artist Stephanie Jemison, who works in a variety of media, including film, sound, language, sculpture, installation art. Her work has been shown at the Museum of Modern Art and the Studio Museum of Harlem, among other venues. In her appearance tomorrow, she will be collaborating with a familiar name, a local artist, cellist, solo artist, composer Jordan Hamilton, a graduate of Western Michigan University and a member of the Last Gasp Collective. And here in the studio, we have a chance to meet Stephanie Jemison and Katie Houston of the KIA, also here to keep us on track. Stephanie, very nice to meet you and get to know you a little bit during the newscast.
Nice to meet you, too.
I have a lot of questions. I feel like you're from a world of art that I don't access very often. And I'm curious about what things are going to look, sound, and feel like tomorrow in your presentation at 5:30 and then at 7 o'clock again.
Thank you. So tomorrow's performance, I think it will actually feel pretty familiar to those of you who have experienced live cello before. The performance is called Recitative, and it's one in a series of performances that are inspired by this funny historical note, which is that a composer named François Sud, who was active in the 19th century, had the idea that he could create a utopian language, a universal second language for the entire world. And his universal second language for the world was uttered entirely through musical notes. So in his system, every word is a little melody, and a longer melody, a sequence of words, a sentence, is the sort of foundation of communication. Then he had the idea that actually, there are so many different ways to derive seven, like a system with seven pieces. For example, the seven colors of the Newtonian rainbow, Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. That's another way of translating language. So he had this idea that he could create a frictionless second language that everyone in the world would learn and be able to use, and that it would enable anybody with any, you know, anyone with, regardless of ability, to speak to and communicate with one another. So someone who, for example, couldn't hear and someone who couldn't see could speak with no impediment at all because they could use one of the alternative versions of this language.
Would you tell me his name again?
His name is François, and the last name is Sudre, S-U-D-R-E. And the language he created was called Sol Re Sol.
And that so originally, sounds like Do Re Mi Fa Sol.
Exactly. So he, you know, one of the sort of points of inspiration for him is the fact that musical notes have already been linked to language through the solfège singing system. Mm-hmm. The solfège singing system is a mnemonic that we use to help us learn and remember and accurately perform music.
Did Mr. Sudre get very far with creating was this more of a concept for him, or did he pursue it? And are there very early recordings of how it sounded?
So all of this happened, this all unfolded pre-recording, in the days before recording. But he was very serious about the language. And, I know that he initially thought that maybe it would have military applications, kind of in the same way that taps functions as a way to sort of call people from a distance all together. He had this idea that that the language could serve as a code, actually. So initially, the proposal was not that it would serve as a universal translation device, but actually that it would be the opposite, that it would serve as a kind of private code that would enable only those who were in the who could could decipher it, to understand one another and to communicate across great distances using military instruments. Then, when that didn't have any traction, he became interested in the exact opposite. And I think, you know, my understanding is that there was some success. He was able to present performances, and there was some interest, like a kind of party trick, or that he was able to travel and share this project. Began to fail, or began to sort of lose steam when the French government became less interested in promoting alternative languages in general. Mm-hmm. So, including an opposition to, for example, forms of sign language and other and other sort of alternatives to French.
Who knows why governments do what they do? So initially, he was trying to make it relevant to perhaps for funding from the government. But yeah, that comes and goes. I understand. It sounds like something that would be fascinating to hear.
Yes,
it sounds musical.
It's musical, and so what you'll hear tomorrow is Jordan interpreting the score that I've written using this device, this Sol-Re Sol language as a translation tool, and playing with all of the different sort of idiosyncrasies of this language.
Did you have to teach yourself how to compose and write music, or were you already trained in that area?
I'm fortunate that I was trained to read and write music as a kid. I learned, you know, I grew up playing piano. I don't know that my parents ever expected that I would later be excavating a 19th century musical language and using my piano lessons, learning how to play chopsticks to do this. But it's fun that I already had some of those skills.
Yeah, it was already something you could apply to the project. Did thinking about this have you listening to people's speech in a different way and hearing things differently in daily life?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, it's funny because I've actually presented different versions of this performance in contexts that are not English speaking often. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I started thinking about this and working with this is that as an artist, I often travel to install exhibitions and to present my work. And I was thinking about how seamless and frictionless travel is for all of us today. And was interested in sort of recalling historical moments when we really fantasized about the possibility of easy, frictionless, open communication and conversation. And to me, that's also a political fantasy. It also imagines a world in which everyone can talk to one another and understand one another.
Universal translator.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so I think, of course, it's impossible to think about this language without also thinking about its failures. And for me, the language has been a tool for sort of reflecting on my own relationship to the communities where I travel, which is one of the reasons why I always work with a local musician to interpret this work.
My guest is Stephanie Jemison, who has traveled here from New York to be with us tomorrow, the Art Hop event. You can arrive at 5:00. First performance is at 5:30. And Jordan Hamilton will be performing Stephanie's score. The title of the score again?
So the body of work is called Recitatif.
Recitatif.
And the performance tomorrow
is... That's an opera term.
Exactly. It's an opera term. And the performance tomorrow is, listeners now will hear this. It's actually not something that's included in the brochure because I just decided. The performance tomorrow is called "The Future Panted at the Gate," and some of the material that's presented tomorrow is a translation from Toni Morrison's novel *Paradise*. This title is a quotation also from that novel.
So you recreated or just built this Sol-Re Sol version for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
From his writings, his ideas, his sutras.
Well, Sudra left an extensive dictionary, and so I draw. I mean, it's in French, but I draw from his French dictionary. There is of course, there's a community. This is the internet in the 21st century. There's a whole community of people who are very interested in this work, and so I draw from those resources as well. And then there's also a little bit of poetics involved, because you know, of course, language. And translation is always interpretive and a little bit imaginative.
With this language, musical language, did you restrict yourself to certain pitches? And does it translate as atonal or more random atonal sounding? You can really manipulate the color of the piece, I think, when you decide
absolutely
what tones to use.
Absolutely. So I did restrict. It's, you know, it's written for seven pitches, and I use the diatonic scale. It's a major scale. I actually have just now begun to think about the next work I'm making in the series, which I'll be presenting in Geneva in April. And for that work, I think for the first time, I might not use a major scale. One of the funny problems with a language like this, as you can imagine, is actually establishing a tonal center so that you know that, for example, a two-pitch word, you know, the second and third pitches, for example, in the scale, to be sure that that word can't be mistaken for another two-pitch word, the fourth and fifth pitches in the scale. It's important to establish a tonal center first for each person, which is one of the things I'll be doing with a drone while Jordan plays.
Okay, what does the setup require? Jordan will be there with amplification, I assume.
Yeah. Jordan will be there. The setup, you know, it's funny. The setup is a little bit different every time, and we still have to figure out exactly how we'll be situated in the museum. But I can tell you that I'll be playing some kind of drone situation, maybe using a MIDI keyboard, and I also will be prompting Jordan in some way, and both of us will have the score in front of us.
Yes, yes, you're the cure, the conductor, but also listener.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, it's a live interactive performance. Mm-hmm. The future panting at the gate, that seems fraught with, you know, portent. What's going on? What were you thinking with the title?
Well, as we know, the amazing novelist Toni Morrison passed away in August. This work, Recitatif, actually has taken from the very beginning, and I've been making performances in this group for several years. This work has always taken its title from a Toni Morrison short story, her only short story, which was called Recitatif. And it's funny because, of course, recitative, you're right. It's recitative is, you know, an opera term, a kind of
song.
Art music. Exactly.
Song dialogue to get you through some of the plot in order to hit the beautiful aria.
Exactly. And so recitative with an F, the way that Toni Morrison spelled it, is a French singular version of recitative. But I also think of it as kind of like a... almost like a vernacular. It's the way that it might sound, the way that you hear the word recitative when it's spoken in English, and so it reminds me of the kind of transliteration of Black American vernacular, which I think is one of the things that she might have been referring to, and that short story is really beautiful. And thematizes language communication, and also refusal to speak, describes the many ways in which communication is possible and impossible. So she's always on my mind, as you know, as I've been thinking about her in particular during the last several months, I thought that it might be interesting to return to Paradise, her novel Paradise, and take the opportunity to really reflect on the original, the kind of goals of François Sud, to use this language to really imagine a better world that might be possible, a world in which everyone could communicate with one another.
Ms. Jemison, I get the feeling that you keep a lot of things on your mind all the time. Is it your job as an artist? Is this the flow of your life? You seem to be breaking things down and analyzing and letting things influence you in service of art, creation. Is that your life?
There are always a lot of things on my mind. I don't think I'm alone. I think all of us are really preoccupied with the complexities of our contemporary world. And my job as an artist, I don't know that my job is to analyze, but my job is certainly to renew our capacity for imagining otherwise. To remind us that there is an otherwise, and to help us all remember that we individually, each of us and all of us together, are obligated actually to imagine that better world that is possible.
I think we have to leave it there for today. Stephanie, thank you very much for getting us thinking about lots of things, including your performances tomorrow at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts Art Hop. And here's where, Katie, I'll have you finish up with the details on tomorrow's performance, time and place, and any other events that, you're looping into the Black Refractions exhibit.
Well, clearly we have a rare opportunity to enjoy and be provoked and maybe get a little bit out of our normal routines by having Ms. Jemison here in Kalamazoo and at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. If you haven't had a chance to see our essentially a full museum turnover of art devoted to diverse artists and different voices and expressions, it's a great opportunity to come down to the museum. Obviously, Art Hop is free to all. We have art to look at and a provocative performance to take a chance at 5:30 and at 7 o'clock. We invite
I don't know
everybody
how provocative
to
it's going to be.
Oh, well,
it's going to be.
I think this is special and rare, and we are just tickled to have Ms. Jemison here. And we've got a busy week coming up, so I will do my job and share a little bit about that. Next week on Tuesday, we have what we're calling a tri-presidential panel. We have our local university and college presidents joining us for a panel at 6:30 with a 5:30 reception. You all know who they are. We'd love to have you come down Tuesday evening for that. On Thursday, we have the Black Artists Series, which is a regionally produced film series by Terea Billings. That's Thursday at 6:30. Friday, we have a night of music and theater. You mentioned the Last Gasp Collective. Mm. They'll be collaborating with Face Off Theater for a performance opportunity Friday the 11th at 6:30. All of these programs are $5 to the general public and $2 for students, free for members and children through age 12. So such a value and such a busy time for us and for the community.
Mm-hmm. Further details are online at kiarts.org. And before we go, you mentioned not working alone in a silo, Stephanie, and one of the artists you mentioned before we went on the air is a cellist named Tamika Reed. And I wonder if you would maybe introduce her a little bit. We're going to hear a little track from her quartet.
Tamika Reed is a really incredible cellist who has lived and worked both in Chicago and in New York. I had the pleasure of working with her in connection with an exhibition at Mass MoCA, including an earlier version, an earlier sort of interpretation of the recitative language. So I'm really excited to share material from her quartet today.
Thank you very much.